Hey, welcome to a Friday Juno afternoon. I'm Andy Klein. I'm your host. Woo! We got a big one today. Lots of great music happening today. We're going to be talking to Colette Costa about this week's not-so-silent film screenings happening this weekend with Miles and Karina, and they're here in the studio with us as well. We have Knights in Satan's Service. Yes, they're with us. A Kiss tribute band, none other than Strata. They're coming in. They're going to be performing tonight at Suite 907. We're going to be talking to them. A Strutter himself, Eric Borass, will be here from Trail Mix. He's going to be talking about National Trail Days. And then we've got a highlight of First Friday happening at the Jack. And all this month featuring a 2015 Druid Art Show. That's coming up right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Over the past 4 days, we've brought you stories looking at Alaska's rural sanitation situation. We've seen how the lack of modern sanitation is linked to disease. We've also reported on the implications the lack of funding has in villages with a limited cash economy. Today, reporter Jocelyn Estes concludes the series.
In communities without running water and flush toilets in Alaska, children are 11 times more likely to develop pneumonia than other Alaskans, and some develop skin infections. Both are due to the shortage of clean water needed for frequent hand washing. Federal and state funding is not keeping up with the need, and the situation is likely to get worse due to climate change. Colleen Swan of Kivalina says villagers had seen the disappearance of sea ice that once protected the village from fierce fall storms, but they were shocked by the tidal surge and flooding that slammed their small barrier island and carried away acres of land.
We know there is a huge problem. It's getting worse. It's going faster. It's like a moving train that's picking up speed. Our train hit in 2004. And we've been dealing with the aftermath of that. And so even if people are in denial, that doesn't change the fact that it's a reality.
Kivalina is now seeking funds to relocate. In some places, high temperatures are turning permafrost, permanently frozen ground, into a soupy muck. A home might settle while the pipes don't, so the pipes break away. Floods may taint a water source or wash out water and sewer systems. Alaska Village Safe Water Facilities Program Director Bill Griffith says agencies are working with the communities with the highest public health risks first, such as communities that have already lost critical elements of their sanitation systems.
We've got communities that have lost their water sources or lost the water line that used to be on the beach that's eroded. That we're trying to get after those first, but it's almost almost like a triage situation right now. We don't have the funds to be able to do everything that we know is going to be affected over the next 20 years, so we're trying to work with the ones that are affected right now.
In Kotzebue, Manilook Hospital Administrator Paul Hansen says modern sanitation will do a lot to improve public health, but he notes good health is also linked to socioeconomic status and to culturally appropriate care.
I think the biggest challenge that we face is really being able to care for ourselves. And when I say that, I mean not only just actually, you know, our daily habits and that sort of thing, but I mean developing our own workforce and having folks from our region taking care of folks from our region.
And Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation President Dan Winkleman hasn't lost hope that Congress or the state legislature will come through with funding to put water and sewer systems in every village in Alaska.
There's about 4,500 homes within the state of Alaska that are not on a pipe water and sewer system.
Innovation has been slow to come for rural sanitation in Alaska, and just as it's begun to appear, so has a dramatic reduction in state revenues. Everyone talks about planning for more resiliency in the face of climate change, but those who are actually working with the problem speak more in terms of triage. Whether they will end up gaining ground or losing it remains to be seen. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jocelyn Estes.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
Support by United Tribes Technical College, offering courses online for a career in medical coding and for updating your current coding certification. Registration available through August 10th online at uttc.edu.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
The music of Miles and Karina, music that you'll be able to hear during a not-so-silent film screenings happening this weekend at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. And with us in the studio right now is none other than Miles and Karina and and the multi-talented Clett Costa is also here. Clett, thanks so much for coming in, and thanks for bringing these guys to town. This is going to be really exciting.
Going to be very exciting.
Yeah.
It's going to be...
You know how much I love these silent, not-so-silent movies.
Well, as clearly stated not so long ago in a radio interview, when I said the loudest person who ever came and heckled one of our silent films was the Andy Klein.
Now, heckled is not correct.
I don't know what other word to use.
I talked loudly during
this movie. Yes, you were not heckling, because that was...
I was enjoying.
You were audibly enjoying it.
Yes.
A great deal. I think this is going to be, I don't mean to, build you guys up too much or make you put a little pressure on you, but because we've done some doozies, I think this is going to be one of the better ones.
It's really exciting to have.
Because they're all really good.
But it's exciting to have people come in, like Miles and Karina, thanks so much for coming in.
We're delighted.
Thank you. Professional musicians.
And who are, recognized. They come in, they've got the CD, they're ready to go. You guys play kind of a variety of interesting music and instruments. Karina, we'll start with you. What are the things that you...
The main instrument I play on this is the accordion. I play a 96 bass accordion with a keyboard side, several reeds, and I also play in this particular show a glockenspiel and a metal mixing bowl.
A metal mixing bowl as well.
Okay. None better on the metal mixing bowl.
Of all the things you just named, the mixing bowl is anything I can play.
It's good. It's a good starter instrument.
Well, bring your own.
Bring your own.
Have you ever tried the glockenspiel?
Don't encourage me.
we like emoting. We like the audience to participate
That's
in
awesome.
Emoting.
Yeah.
Everyone's getting a metal mixing bowl when they come in. Right. It's metal mixing bowl night.
So. Bring your own butter and flour.
And Miles, what are the instruments you chiefly play?
In this score, I'll be playing the guitar, the National Resophonic guitar, which is lovely. I play percussion on it and, of course, play it like a guitar. And I play the banjo and viola in this score. Slide whistle and other gadgets will pop up as well.
And the banjo and viola in this show this weekend are donated from people here.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. Eric Chadwell on the banjo. And a big shout-out thank you to Beth and crew at Capital Copy for the viola and for printing all my awesome posters.
Yay.
And tell me about the film, Colette.
It's a 1926 film considered, I think, the first full-length feature animated film.
Yeah.
Right? That's about right?
That's right.
It was conceived and directed by a woman named Lotte Renninger, who was a German birth, and she kind of mastered this art of paper-cut silhouettes. And began making short films with them. And she actually built this kind of machine that she used. It was sort of her set that she made to accommodate her style of animation, of stop-motion animation. And I think this particular movie took her 3 years. She made like 40 films altogether, something like that.
Actually, she made 50 animated films 50. And 80 films in her lifetime.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because she was making films she took a big break in her life, but her last film she made when she was like in her 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so this one was, a lot of hers were based on Grimm's fairy tales and sort of these whimsical kind of stories. This one is based on 1001 Arabian Nights, right?
Yep. And so this is the Adventures of Prince Ahmed. Is that Ahmed?
Yep.
Ahmed.
So this is different. This is a different thing than the other not so silent films you've done before, because you guys have already really scored this,
yes,
right,
and have worked with this piece of work before and have mm-hmm. really studied it, you know, intensely.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the other ones are people who've played along. They've watched it, they've scored it, but it maybe the amount of time hasn't gone into
it,
right?
Well, these guys spent months scoring this, and they were actually commissioned. It was a commissioned piece of work from the Northwest Film Forum.
Okay.
And you've been commissioned to two or three others, haven't you, two or three?
Yep.
5, 7, 12?
Yep.
Hike. because Playboy Spaceman and
Totally we're doing stuff.
It's an original score as well.
Absolutely.
But, and that's of course they're on their own planet. God bless them.
Yeah.
Planet 2. Population 2. And these guys have performed this, I think you said 70 times?
I think it's not quite that many, but we've definitely watched it several hundred times. And we still enjoy it.
When you first started watching it, did some of the things that you're playing today, are they still reflected in when you first watched it and first thought of ideas about it, or has it how much has it changed?
It definitely evolved.
Yeah.
But our very first ideas that we had, when we first started watching it, we do a lot. We write down adjectives to describe things and then just kind of get musical ideas out of that. So we do a bunch of composing, and some of it's improvisation, which we then refer back to get ideas from to shape more fully for the pieces.
Wow, and then how do you go about picking the instruments that you'll use for the different scenes?
That's a good question. Yeah. There's different moods that come out of different instruments, and the accordion is incredible in what it can do. It has such a broad range. It can do with so many things so well. And so just to destroy that, I'll bring the banjo out.
Just to balance the universe.
Yeah, burst
to the ground.
Yeah.
No, we only play, maybe 7 or 8 instruments, so we don't play every instrument. We don't play oboe. Oboe would be nice in this score.
It would be great.
Yeah, but we don't. We have to rely on the accordion to be the oboe.
Yeah.
I see. Yeah. Okay. So, and some of that is like kind of describing that vintage Arabian feel and those kinds of things.
Very little in this score.
We didn't try because we don't know that music well.
Right.
You know, there's a few scales we used from that realm of music.
But just listening to you guys practicing today, it definitely has that feel to it. And part of it is this just the noise the accordion makes.
We prefer
joyful.
To call it sound.
the sound.
No, let's get our terms.
Could you turn off this microphone over here? I don't know if
it doesn't work.
They never give me a live mic. Are you kidding?
This is all on tape away.
Because we found the same thing when Rattle Trap Ruckus did Black Pirate. It's also it sort of doesn't take place in any particular place, but that same sort of, I don't know, it's not an Eastern, but that same...
No, it's an evocative thing to it. Yeah.
There's certain musical shortcuts that put you in the mood of you know, these things, and sometimes they're what we think of as either cultural areas or something like that, but they can even be vintage. You think, well, that's not really how that place is anymore, but you know, when I think back of Ali Baba and the 40 Thieves, I have this certain... idea.
Right.
I don't even know what instruments make that music. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe a lot of that's just influenced by what Hollywood did at that time, and maybe a lot of it's influenced
cartoons.
By
cartoons.
Yeah,
when we were kids, that was a big thing.
Hassan Chop.
We just scored a Buster Keaton film that takes place on a river boat, essentially. So we did a lot of rags. So a lot of ukulele and kazoo and
it just kind of naturally.
Yeah. So and the banjo in that one as well. Some instruments just lend themselves to the era or the type of film that it is. And this one's such a fantasy film. We just tried to make up as many exotic sounds and different things as possible to meet the emotions in the film.
What different venues have you played these kinds of films in? Is it typically small art house kind of?
We've played some pretty big theaters as well.
Is it different?
It's different. It really depends. A lot is the audience, if the audience is really into it, and that's usually the case. And
see, that's what I was doing, Colette.
It is good to have people who emote because it adds to it, like to cheer the villain, or not the villain, sorry. You can cheer the villain.
Satan.
We've done small shows in house. We've done a couple ones as house concerts, and then we've done them in very, very, sit-down.
St. Louis Art Museum. So, enormous screens, 150-foot screens.
Yeah. And then also very small.
And then little art houses. Yeah. Yeah.
And then where are they going to be placed in the theater so that...
They'll be up, well, they'll be up stage right, Andy.
Okay.
If you wanna,
I mean, I'm just wondering, you know how that there's that thing about you're able to... It's such a cool experience to go to these because you're able to watch the film, but then you're able to watch the musicians.
Yes.
And sometimes the musicians are scrambling around and getting different stuff, and like it just becomes such a fascinating part of the whole show.
Yeah.
It really kind of shows you how silent films... were so captured imagination so much when they first came out.
Oh yeah,
this is really live because of that live music. It was a show. It was a live show.
It's just,
you know?
It completely transforms the film. And this is a wonderful film. You can watch it at your house. You can watch it on your TV or wherever. But something happens when you put, even if you're watching it scored, like a video that you bought. But something else happens when you're watching it with a live band, and I can't stress that enough.
Yeah.
And it happens. And you've been there, Andy.
Yeah,
it happens
so exciting,
every
really.
Time we do one. The people who are regulars who come every time, they're like winner, and newbies especially are. It's just great to see, to see them walk out and just be so, like, doinked on a silent film.
On a silent film, right? Yeah. On an old Buster Keaton film or something, and you walk out going, "Wow, so it's so fun." So tell me, let's do a little details, the times, and all that stuff.
So it's tomorrow. I can't believe it's tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow.
Saturday, 7 and 9 p.m. I know you love those 9 p.m. shows, Andy.
That's the one I go to.
Yes, you got a little extra something under your jacket
I don't know about that.
I don't know. What are you talking about? And then Sunday at 4 p.m., it was printed in the Capital City Weekly as 4:30, but it is 4 p.m. The movie's only
67 minutes long.
So, yeah, just over an hour long. There'll be a little film introduction beforehand, kind of fill out the bill. Tickets are... You can come down to the theater and get them. They're on our website. There's a widget, and you can get them at Rainy Retreat Books. I think maybe through today. I don't know if they're open tomorrow, I'll be honest. But definitely.
Coming down to the theater is the easiest way to do it in person,
sure.
Right?
Yeah, you can get them today. And I'll be selling, quote, advance tickets until about 3 o'clock tomorrow. And after 3 o'clock, I go bananas in there, so I don't answer the door.
It also sells out, I would say. It's really worth getting the tickets early because the ones I've been to are sold out and it's standing room only and people are jammed up around the side.
And I love Juno. Juno, I love you guys. You know I do. You have the worst habits in the world, okay? You come into a 7 o'clock show at 7:15. Oh, I just want to peek in. Well, guess what? You and 40 other people wanted to just peek in.
Well, that's not the worst habit. I mean, the spitting is awful, too.
That's me.
That's terrible.
That's
I know.
Spitters, please stay at the back.
no spitting.
I have been
something we can all agree on.
And I have been building up our Juno audiences as being kind of rad. So
they are.
Please don't disappoint me because it's
well, Colette, thanks so much
ugly.
For bringing these folks into town.
Okay.
Miles and Karina, it's the adventures of Prince Ahmed.
Tomorrow, 7 to 9 p.m.
7 to 9.
Theater.
Tomorrow and 4 o'clock on Sunday.
See you there.
Thank you so much. Here's one more. We're going to play this track 11 that we were thinking about playing. A little bit lower key
11.
Here.
Oh, okay.
Lovely.
Yeah.
I really like listening to it. We're going to listen to that as we go out here. And we're going to talk
as always, clothing optional.
And clothing is optional. Yeah,
excellent.
Optional anyway. All right. Thanks so much, you guys. Thank you.
night away with Susu and the Prophets at Perseverance Theater's end-of-season bash, June 6, 7 p.m. on the PT stage. Mingle with actors and thank artists, volunteers, and supporters. Enjoy special performances, backstage tours, a no-host bar, and a drawing for PT's 31st annual travel raffle. That's right. There are only a few days left to purchase tickets. Win one of 25 prize packages, including the grand prize. Two tickets anywhere Alaska Airlines flies. To purchase raffle and end-of-season bash tickets, call 463-TIXS.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services in the Jordan Creek Center. Northern Audiology offers diagnostic medical hearing expertise and digital technology hearing instruments. 789-6780.
Southeast Alaska Independent Living and your public media station in Juneau present the annual Only Fools Run at Midnight. Run, walk, or wheel 5K or 1 mile on June 13th at 11:59 p.m. Be one of the first 550 to pre-register now at ktoo.org or saleinc.org, and you'll get a free t-shirt. Dress in costume, compete for best centipede, and win prizes. Proceeds from this event will be shared between Sale and your public media station in Juneau. For more information, call 463-6422.
That should be a fun event. Welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. In the studio with me now is Christine Crooks. Christine, thanks so much for coming in. You're here to talk about the 2015 Juried Art Show that's happening at the Jack, as we hear, well, here we are at First Friday.
I can't believe it.
A lovely First Friday. It's always so fun. What a fun event First Friday is, isn't it? It's just grown in the past few years. It's been amazing.
I was trying to think how long we've been doing. I think since like the year 2000. And, you know, it just has this momentum of bringing people or keeping people downtown after work.
It's great.
And, Joy, it's just a huge list of things to do, and we're real excited because periodically at the Jack, we have a juried art show. And it's quite exciting for artists to have this opportunity to put their work out there in front of a jurist, and they make a personal decision.
So who wakes up the jury of the...
This year, it's Sue Ann Randall.
Oh, okay,
and
so one person.
One person.
Is that usually how it is with juried art shows?
Yeah.
Or,
in this case, yes.
Okay.
And I think it's very typical.
That you have kind of a well-known, respected artist who then just, you know, they're giving their opinion of what, you know, that kind of, yeah. So
exactly.
Right.
You know, in this day and age, the jurying is done frequently online. People submit digital images, and the jurist is able to look at those and make a selection. We're sort of limited because it's a very small, intimate, as we like to say, gallery.
Mm-hmm, right.
And 26 just about fills it up. So Sue Ann had a very difficult time. I think most jurists say it's really hard to get it down to a size that will fit in the space you have. But she did select 26, and the show opens this evening.
Do you know how many overall submittals she had?
I don't.
Okay.
I forgot to ask that.
And then of the juried art show, that means she picks those 26, and then are there sort of ones that are recognized as of special merit?
Yes, she does, and that is a secret that will be revealed at 4:30.
Okay.
No, it's great. I was going to say it, too. If you are interested, at 4:30, Sue Ann, the jurist, local art enthusiast and artist herself, will be there to sort of explain how she made the selection and then announce best of show and honorable mention.
Were there any criteria around what type of art was being looked for? Was it, you know, was it painting, sculptures? Could it be multimedia or digital, or was it just wide open?
It was wide open, and all of those were submitted, and we have, although the majority of the show is flat, two-dimensional work, there is some 3D sculpture. There's a mask. There's an engraved watch. There's fiber art. And there's also, I can't quite remember if MK's Grid, it's a media presentation that's going on just outside the gallery. And I think I should mention that this week the featured portrait is Bill Legere.
Mm-hmm. I heard that, yes. And you know what? One of our next guests is also one of the featured, one of the people, Eric Boras from Forum Trail Mix, who actually is using, so cool in this day and age, he's using MK's portrait that they did for his Facebook profile portrait.
Oh, right.
Right. So you know
very
what I mean?
Cool.
So it's kind of like people, it's that kind of extra way of being able to incorporate art into your life, which is a really exciting thing. So that's happening right outside. Not part of the juried art show, but happening and being shown right now at the Jack, and a great time to go check it out during First Friday.
Absolutely.
Any other great stuff or cool stuff happening as far as the June Arts and Humanities Council that's going on that you might want to mention? Or?
Well, yeah, this is Food Truck Friday,
okay.
And summer has begun. We're now doing our summer hours, so things are open starting at 9 in the morning.
You mean the Food Truck Fridays I read about in the New York Times?
Yes.
Is that amazing? I know. I was so excited.
You don't have to go to any other huge big city. You can have it right here on the lawn. They warned rain and wind. I'm not seeing that as I look out the window.
It doesn't seem, no.
I mean, wear a raincoat if you're worried.
We've got plenty of sun in the last month. We're fine. We can use a little bit of dampness. No problem.
You know, and then they're going to have this ballroom dancing in the gym part of the Jack this evening. So that's
happening as well? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a full evening. You can go out, get fed. You can go to all the different galleries, come back, and dance the night away.
That sounds great. Jack is such a great thing to have in our downtown. And it's really changed the cultural landscape of Juneau, it feels like.
It has, you know, and Armory. I always think back to Paris and the Armory shows and all of that, and here we are.
Yeah, I used to play basketball in there. But boy,
you probably still could.
It's better now. No, that wasn't good basketball being played in the Armory back then.
Better to go outside this time of
year. That's right. Well, right? Just one more time. The I think everyone knows First Friday starts around 4:30 or so.
That's exactly right, 4:30, and Sue Ann Randall, our jurist, will be there to explain how she made this difficult decision to accept 26 pieces and find out in person who is best of show, honorable mention, and the show will be running through June.
Sounds great. Thanks. Christine Crooks from June Arts and Humanities Council. Thanks so much for coming in, and see you all out there during First Friday. Here now is Garrison Keillor with Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 5th of June, 2015. Birthday of Bill Moyers, Hugo, Oklahoma, 1934, grew up in Marshall, Texas. When he was 16, he was hired by the town newspaper as a reporter, beginning his career as a journalist. Best known for his interview series on PBS, The Power of Myth, A World of Ideas, and most recently as host of Moyers and Company, which ran until this past January. Bill Moyers, who said, "News is what people want to keep hidden, and everything else is publicity." It's the birthday of Federico Garcia Lorca, born in Fuente Vaqueros in the province of Granada in 1898. He went to school in Madrid at the Residencia de Estudiantes, the student residence and cultural center where he met the composer Manuel de Falla and the filmmaker Luis Buñuel and the painter Salvador Dali, with whom Federico Lorca had a romantic relationship for a number of years, which forced him to acknowledge his homosexuality. He became famous in Spain with the publication of Gypsy Ballads. He had a falling out with Salvador Dali and of another love affair, came to the United States, lived in New York, wrote A Poet in New York, returned to Spain in 1930, wrote his rural trilogy Blood Wedding and Yerma. The Spanish Civil War broke out in 1936. The Nationalists did not look favorably on him. They dragged him from his home, imprisoned him, drove him to a hill outside of town, and shot him. His body was never found. And it's the birthday of the poet and novelist David Wagner, born in Massillon, Ohio, 1926. Grew up in Indiana, industrial town between Gary and Chicago, and then went out to the Pacific Northwest. He was offered a job at the University of Washington. He said, "When I drove down out of the Cascades and saw the region that was to become my home territory, my extreme uneasiness turned into awe. I had never seen or imagined such greenness, such a promise of healing growth. Everything I saw appeared to be living ancestral forms of the dead earth where I had tried to grow up. I came from a place where nature was ruined, and here the natural world was still in a pristine state. poet and also novelist, wrote 10 novels, best known for his novel, The Escape Artist. Here's a poem by David Wagner on his birthday, a poem entitled Up Against the Sea. At the foot of the cliff, the sea is taking back what it left there long ago, and the landowners have made a barricade of 3 old cars between low and high tide and loaded them with so many river stones they've been weighed down below their springs, below their shock absorbers. The waves are breaking over the side panels on blurred teenage graffiti, and barnacles and tougher limpets have made themselves at home on mats and cushions, on the salt versions of vinyl and rust. The sea is welcoming all of them, as ever, as passengers at the end of a lover's leap, at the beginning of a joyride down an old lover's lane again. Up Against the Sea by David Wagner from A Map of the Night, published by University of Illinois Press and used by permission here on The Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org. And by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Produced by Joy Biles, with assistance of Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And welcome back to a Juno afternoon, where the forecast for the rest of today calls for likely rain, lows tonight around 48 degrees, and for tomorrow and the rest of this weekend, rain is likely as well, but we needed to get a little moisture after that amazing May of sunshine every single day. Sarah McNair Grove is my next guest on a Juno afternoon, who's the president of the Juno Community Band. Sarah, thanks so much for coming in.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here.
And you guys have a busy month coming up here with kind of culminating a lot in what's happening on 4th of July.
That's right. We have just started our rehearsals for the 4th of July Juno Volunteer Marching Band. We had our first rehearsal about a week ago, and our next rehearsal is June 10th. And this group is just a group of musicians who love to play band music and get in the spirit of Juno's 4th of July, and it is open to anybody who is 7th grade and older. You don't have to have any marching experience, you just have to be able to play a band instrument.
And that's always, it's such a highlight of the parade every year, because it's like, I mean, the word ragtag is maybe not the right word, but it's a little bit, you know, like here comes this crew of people, and they're just doing it and loving it and having the best time.
That's right. I mean, I think you've kind of nailed our mystique on the head. We take our marching rather lightly. We're there to provide some music and just be a good community spirit,
right?
Kind
like
of
when
thing
the
for
bad
the
news bears, you know, get together.
That's right.
They win. They end up winning the World Series.
Right. Right. No.
But yeah, so it's great. So tell me about how that first rehearsal goes.
Yeah, the first rehearsal is kind of loose, just because we never know who's going to show up.
Right.
So the director has a wide variety of music because we have all ages and all experiences. We try to have a few easier pieces, and we try to have a few more difficult pieces. But generally, we play sort of junior high level, easy high school level, just because we have just a few rehearsals, and we want everybody to be able to
participate. And those are crowd pleasers anyway, right? Those are the fun ones. People love hearing that kind of classic marching band stuff.
Right. We have sort of our typical Stars and Stripes, Washington and Post, a national emblem that we play, our 3 marches in the parade. And then we also do a couple of sit-down concerts before the 4th of July, and in those we play show tunes, marches, just sort of light, fun, crowd-pleasing kind of band music to get into the spirit.
Yeah, and that's such a fun idea to kind of get to get people just kind of used to the idea of doing it. It gives people a little practice, some of the musicians a little practicing
right.
together.
Mm-hmm.
Is it sometimes the first time people have even worked with a conductor and that kind of thing? Or
yes, the conductor this year and actually for the last couple of years is Amy Bibb. And we really encourage people who haven't picked up their instrument for a year or two, this is a really good place to get back into, you know, playing again and get your lips strong.
Right,
and, you know.
Get your chops back, yeah.
That's right.
That's right.
It takes a while if you haven't played.
Yeah, well, so tell me about the concerts. They're happening kind of the weekends beforehand, right?
Right, the week before the 4th of July parade, The band historically has done two Marine Park concerts, one on Sunday at 3 o'clock, and so this one is June 28th. And then we've done a noon concert, so this one is going to be on July 1st. And then since we started doing Food Truck Fridays, we've also participated in that for the last year or so.
Oh, cool.
So July 3rd, Food Truck Friday, we're also
nice.
Be there.
Nice, nice.
Yeah.
So, and so that's your final chance to really get it down, fine-tune it before the marching happens. And then,
that's
so
right.
for anyone who's listening that wants to get involved, can people still get involved?
Oh, definitely.
Okay.
You can come anytime. We do have rehearsal. Our next rehearsal is June 10th, and that's from 7 to 9 in the evening, and they happen at Faith Lutheran Church out in the valley. And we've got the schedule on our website, which is www.junocommunityband.org. And if you want to email, our email is junocommunityband@gmail.com, and I'll be happy to respond to any questions. But just show up. You don't have to do anything else but show up.
Sounds great. And it sounds like, just such, as you said, such a great excuse to pick that instrument back up if you haven't for a while, or if you're someone who plays and maybe hasn't marched, or maybe you're an absolute pro out there that was at Florida A&M back in the day or something.
Exactly.
Some
we want
diamond in the rough out there.
Exactly. Yeah. We want everybody, those people that are just learning, they can sit alongside the more experienced folks. Everybody's welcome.
Sounds great. Susan McNair Grove from Juno Community Bands, thanks so much for coming in, and have a great 4th of July.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Just got exciting in here because Strutter just strutted their way in here.
Seriously.
Kiss Tribute Band is in town to play at Suite 907 tonight, right?
Tonight.
It's happening tonight.
Tomorrow and tonight.
And thanks you guys so much for coming in. Can we just kind of go down the line and just introduce ourselves here?
Hey, I'm Bill the Demon.
Bill the Demon.
Rob the Ace.
Bobby the Catman.
Rob the Paul.
All right. Very
Star
good.
Starchild.
Starchild over there. Yes. From Demon to Starchild. And Space Ace, love it. Batman, yes, all the way through. So so tell me, you know, to me, Kiss, now, I don't know if we're, I think I'm older than you guys, but to me, when I was just really young, Kiss was that thing that showed me how cool rock and roll could be.
Exactly.
You know, you got into it, it was fun, it was exciting, it was badass, it was everything, right?
Right.
And plus the music was great and exciting and fun. I mean, but for you guys, like, it seems like you took that kind of passion and just really ran with it. You became generals in the army.
That's right.
It's a way of life. Major to you.
So I guess So just tell me. I'm just speaking to the demon here. I'll just ask you. Just tell me, what was it that inspired you so much about Kiss? What was it about Kiss that made you?
It was the show. It was about the show. You know, and so for us, it was just you. Just present that show how you see it, how you see it. So
yeah,
that's
just about right right there. Yeah. How about you, Paul? To ask you over there, Love Child.
You know, similar sort of attitude. Is it was like not just the music; it was actually a show. I mean, still to this day, that's kind of really how I think we all approach it. It's like you're actually seeing a show. So
right.
Music, everything, you know.
And have you found what's going on with the, you know, band's popularity is kind of come and go and rise and fall. What's going on right? To me, it seems like Kiss is,
well,
now Kiss, bigger than ever.
Kiss is going, you know, strong right now.
Right.
You know. But when we started doing this, they didn't do the makeup. So that's what there was such an appeal for, because you couldn't see Kiss with makeup on.
Kind of took over where they sort of stopped for a bit, you know.
Oh, so tell me about that. You mean you guys would do, you were doing the makeup, but they weren't doing makeup back
exactly.
then.
Right,
they
were
during
that.
They changed during the 80s years and all that stuff when they stopped doing it.
They took the makeup off, you know.
And people wanted the makeup, so you guys were like, oh, we got them.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
But I mean, you know, what's amazing, actually, I'd have to say, now meeting you guys in person.
Of course, they've seen the light, too.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
right.
They've seen the light, and they went, oh.
Right. So when they're doing
makeup,
that to me too, that was such a thing. The whole disguise, the whole thing. Even like Gene Simmons was dating Cher, but he was never seen with his, all that stuff. All that, it was really cool. But you know, it's really interesting now that I'm meeting you guys in person. You guys have a uncanny resemblance to the actual guys in Kiss. So, you know, to me, even without the makeup.
Well,
do you think?
Well, I thought we had the makeup on.
No, sorry.
We're supposed to fake like we're having the makeup on.
We don't wear makeup.
Oh, this is the reality show makeup. Well,
those gossips are amazing.
What's the thing that keeps you guys kind of excited and enjoying what you're doing?
We just have fun with it. Yeah. I mean, that's it. We just have fun.
And
it's easy.
It's easy just to have.
It's not easy, but it's fun.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I think it's easy.
Do you guys feel that you are you guys trying to? Do you keep up as Kiss comes out with new stuff, or when they come out with new stuff, do you keep up with contemporary stuff, or do people just want the classic stuff mostly?
Really, when we started doing it, it was like we just wanted to do the makeup era. We just wanted to do the live too.
Right.
You know, and then when they took you weren't going to see us do Lick It Up and stuff like that. But now they've came back and they do all that stuff, so we do add some of those songs in there. But we're still true to the old school, Alive 1, Alive 2.
I guess really how you could look at it is like we do all the classics, but everybody kind of expects and wants, when they see the Kiss show, all the classic hits.
Not that they don't have classics after they took the makeup off, because they had plenty of classics there too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of an amazing thing to seem like this multi-generational band as far as the appeal goes, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and just kind of, they just keep it rolling, and then you guys as well. So tell me a little bit about, have you guys ever met them?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Not all of them necessarily, but
Bill's the reason they put the makeup back on.
Yeah.
That's right. They go, well, if you can do it, I can.
So how was that experience?
And I have the money to prove it.
That's right. How was that experience meeting them, these guys that, in a lot of ways the career that you guys have is based off of this kind of image that they made and this music they made?
How did they accept it?
I think
they're still flattered. You know,
sure, I would think so.
Peter was very nice to me. He almost gave me his personal blessing. He was very, very encouraging. It was good,
Yeah, very cool.
But it seemed that it's something that, that they do. The makeup's their makeup. So they, they were like that, too. Where they would say,
I also think
is what we, that's what we do.
Right, yeah.
But I think
can you find something else to do, please?
I think they do see the
I mean, it's that thing where, if Kiss could travel to every town and was traveling to, okay, great, but there's so many fans out there,
they
could
be here.
Yeah,
they could be here.
You never know.
I hear that they do come to our shows.
Is that right?
And watch.
Oh,
Kiss played Alaska on their first tour. I don't know where at, but
yeah. Well, it doesn't.
Anchorage,
Anchorage, right? Yeah, but they might have hit Anchorage. So, how long have you guys been kind of like is playing Kiss music the stuff you kind of started with as kids, or did you kind of grow into this?
Yeah, I don't think it wasn't the first music that we listened to and stuff.
We used to listen to the Beatles.
Yeah.
You know, I miss the Beatles. Yeah. The Beatles weren't in our household for some reason.
Huh. Everybody told
I heard more Motown stuff. Yeah. I guess my parents must have listened to that. But Kit, you know.
Alice Cooper.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, Alice Cooper, Kiss. I remember listening to my grandmother tell me horror stories about Alice Cooper concerts. And I'd be like, really?
Whereas, I think Kiss is a little more tame, right? Kind of tamed down version.
Right, right.
Yeah, Alice Cooper had that whole other kind of dimension of macabre. That's right, yeah, right. And Kiss kind of had that really interesting fusion of the glam rock stuff with the hard rock stuff, right? Yeah. They brought the glam to hard rock and then blew it up into this amazing show.
Yeah, so it wasn't so glammy, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, you could get into it. You could pump your fist to it.
Right.
Get aggressive about it, but still see the show. Yeah.
Yep.
So you guys are playing tonight. Suite 907 is where it's at.
Yep.
And 9 o'clock. Is this part of a little bit of a kind of Alaska tour you're doing? Do you head up north from here, or is this one stop? Or
we head back to the Midwest.
Okay, you've been up north already, or you just came up here for this one stop?
Just one weekend.
Okay.
One off weekend.
Yeah. And then what is what's your touring schedule like? Look like? Are you just on the road all the time?
All over the place.
Yeah.
We're here tomorrow night.
We're in Juneau, Alaska. We must get everywhere.
Yes,
right.
We're going to South Dakota.
South Dakota, North Dakota, and West Dakota,
East Dakota.
South,
Northeast
Dakota.
All the Dakotas.
Every one of them.
And then parts unknown.
We've seen them all.
Yes. Well, and tell me about kind of like what are there areas of the country that you haven't seen and places you haven't gone to, places you want to go play?
Well, I mean.
This was the last one.
I haven't been to Hawaii yet, so if anybody wants to make an offer, that's
all right.
Yeah,
Strutter. I played Hawaii.
Look it up online.
Strutter online, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you guys feel like you kind of bring...
I think they're waiting for us in Russia. I mean,
absolutely.
I'm sure that it would go over great.
In Japan?
We're close, actually, so we can get over there.
You can see it from here, that's what I hear. Yeah.
I've
never
it.
Quite seen it from here, but yeah. Do you guys feel like you bring something particularly a particular style? I mean, are you when you're doing a show? I would guess it's not like pure mimicry, right? I mean, you're trying to bring to people the experience of what Kiss is, but you're also bringing your own musicianship and your own stuff.
Yeah,
to it as
a little
well.
Bit.
Is that right?
We're really trying to do what
recreate what they did in their best.
But like you said, we are our own musicians, so we do. Probably do things a little bit different.
Yeah, we're big Kiss fans as well, as you guys can imagine. So we just try to nail it as best we can to make sure that if we were fans out there, basically we're doing what we expect.
All the movements, all the little details, trying to make it close as possible.
Like I said, it's like a show,
right?
You know, so all those little parts, you know, they mean something.
So people out there who are like real Kiss freaks, like they'll pick up the things that would typically happen
absolutely,
in concerts and that kind of stuff as well.
Right. Because, I mean, over the history of Kiss, it's always been a band that you would want to film or video.
Yeah, play. Absolutely.
So
there's so much stuff out there from all the years of people doing that you could find those old vintage concerts where maybe some other bands you don't see... You know, a whole tour of concerts and
they've just been big. So they've just been so big for so long. You know, So you've and been so visual for so long.
Right,
gotten so much visual attention for so long. Yeah.
But if you had to actually date kind of our show, it'd be around 77, 78 type of. You know,
is that right? So you
kind of like we have the Love Gun costumes. You know, that's kind of the look we have for this particular show. So
very cool. All right, it's Strutter. You guys are having
my
tonight.
My cock it moves in a circular motion.
Does it?
And in
counter,
and out.
Counterclockwise
and
or clockwise?
It
moves around.
Both at the same time.
Well, I noticed when I got up here for some reason, it started going counterclockwise.
That's right. When you go down to South America, it goes the other way.
Yeah.
All right, you guys. Thanks so much for coming. That's Strutter.
Thank
They're
you.
Happening tonight at Suite 907. Now, is it tonight and tomorrow night?
Tonight and tomorrow.
Tomorrow and tomorrow night.
Tonight
show
tomorrow.
Is happening.
Tomorrow and tonight. We can rock all day. We can roll all
there it is. All right. That's Strutter. Thanks again, you guys. Go check him out tonight and tomorrow night at Suite 907.
Dynamite!
I know a thing or two about her.
Who else just strutted in here?
Derek Boras. Trail Mix.
Following the Kiss cover band. That's,
oh,
that's a lot.
It's tough. Yeah. That's what we were just saying. That's tough. Yeah. Following Kiss. Who wants to follow Kiss? Nobody, man. That is rough. But thanks for coming in, man. It's National Trails Day tomorrow, right?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So you guys going to go check out and work on Lemon Creek Trail?
Lemon Creek Trail, yeah. We're going to do some work on it, harden up some muddy areas, do some brushing, do some revegetation stuff, and just kind of dry it out and get it hard so people can walk on it without getting too muddy.
So you ran through a couple of things there, but tell me a little bit about the process, because I think it's interesting, actually. The maintenance of trails has gotten to be a little bit more scientific than I think it used to be in a way. You know, the way you guys now are maintaining trails, you know, I noticed so much of a difference between now and like 20 years ago walking around and just, you know, trails would get maintained and then the boards would sink and then stuff, you know. So tell me a little bit about, like, those different steps it takes when you want to maintain a trail.
Pretty much all, like, the kind of the history of what it went through. So their first trails were just miners trying to get to their mines as fast as they could, and a lot of them didn't really think they'd be going out there for 50 years or so. They're just trying to get a trail that'll last 5-10 years or so. So they'd lay down, they just cut down trees and lay them right in the mud, and something that was enough to support what they were doing, and or, you know, if they had some gravel or whatnot, they put that down. And a lot of those trails lasted for a while, and they started really falling apart. And sometime in the 70s or 80s, someone figured out, look, planks of pressure-treated wood, that works all right. You know, that's easy to do.
Because there used to even be the trails that were like the corduroy trails.
Yeah, that had the first ones. Yeah, those cutting logs, trees down and laying them together.
Which were awesome and cool, but death traps.
Yeah.
Right? Just slick and, you know.
And muddy and fall. Yeah, right. Those are all pretty much rotted out now.
Yeah, and so then they went to pressure treated lumber.
A lot of that happened around here because it was fast and cheap. You
and,
just go and like.
But so many of those end up just kind of floating in a puddle and they. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's and they get slick. They later moss starts growing on them and they're slippery and people fall. And so we're trying to do everything we try and do now should last, you know, 70 years or so. We're just trying to put, we only use rock if we can. So we use a lot of gravel, so it should be trails that are there for a very long time. Cost more, but if you have to replace boardwalk every 10, 15 years, you know, long term.
Well, the other thing that I always thought with the boardwalk trails, so if there ended up being a big muddy spot, what do people do? They jump off the boardwalk, you walk around, so you're degrading all of this area that, and the kind of point of these trails is to keep everything as pristine as possible outside of the trail, right?
Yeah, so many trails go through muskeg, which is just such an easy thing to destroy with a lot of work. And during the winter, the spring and the fall, when there's ice on the boardwalk, that's just, that's suicide.
It was awful,
people always walk on the sides of it, and it just increases the footprint of the trail much wider than it was intended to be. So by putting gravel down, giving someone something that there's no reason to step off it, so it keeps the footprint very small.
What's the process of putting gravel down?
First, you got to prepare the surface. So, you know, if there's a lot of mud or roots or whatever, dig those out, kind of get it flat and level, put landscaping fabric down, and then put gravel on it. And that's pretty much all we do is figure out new and interesting ways of getting gravel out into the woods and putting it down.
So a lot of it's hand carrying and stuff like that,
right?
We
have some small power carriers. We use a lot of those, and then after a point we start flying in sling loads of gravel that we're doing that right now at the Peterson Lake Trail, working with the Forest Service on that. And they slung in, I forget how many bags and yards of gravel, but quite a few. And
that seems like a tough trail, that Peterson one.
Yeah,
you know,
it's getting pretty good.
That's
what
cool.
We worked on. It's
I remember so much that trail being just like the root maze, ankle catcher, right?
And the knee deep mud, But it's we're over a mile now, and it's what's there now is beautiful. So
that's awesome.
Cool.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's really cool because the work you guys do just brings people so much more out into this environment we live in. That's why we all probably, so many of us live in Juneau because of the environment.
Yeah, I think so. It's a And it's a hard, just tromping around in the woods here is not always, it's kind of tricky. It can be done. I've done enough of it, but yeah, it's having a trail to get you out to these cool places definitely makes it easier and more enjoyable, and we have a lot of trails for a town our size, so.
Yeah, amazing amount.
Yeah.
It's one of the reasons why it's so cool to live here.
Yeah.
And then you have a bunch of volunteers that help you do that stuff.
Yeah,
right?
That's the other thing, is like the community is so involved in the trails here. It's wonderful. It's like, it's kind of there's not a lot, there's a lot of support for Trail Mix, which is great. It's great to be part of an organization that has so much support from the community.
Yeah, a lot of history here as well. And you say Trail Mix and everyone knows what you mean around here.
Yeah,
and
they're not thinking snack food.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So tell me a little bit about the event that's happening tomorrow.
So we're going to be working on Lemon Creek Trail, just behind Home Depot. So if you drive down Industrial past Home Depot, there's a pullout there. We're going to start at 9 a.m. We're going to have coffee there. It's Juno time, so we're going to wait for people to show up, probably around 9:15 or so. I'll rally the troops and we'll talk through it. We'll be working until about noon, and then we're going to have some food and other refreshments. And,
might be some beer.
Maybe some beer.
I don't know. Whatever.
If that goes up, that'd be great. Yeah. Thank you for that. And we'll work for all ages, anyone,
yeah,
all available.
What kind of work can people expect to do?
So the hard part will be pushing the wheelbarrows full of gravel up the trail and then spreading it out and getting a nice crown to it so water runs off it, then tamping it down. We'll also be doing some ditching to try and dry out some of these areas, get some water flow going off them. Be doing some re-veg work, which is great for small people. If you've got kids, bring those out. And we'll pick moss out of the forest and lay it around the sides of the trail where people have expanded out and to kind of make it look more natural. Be doing some brushing with root clippers, just going through and clipping things. So something for everybody, all ages, all ability levels. We're happy to have you. If you're showing up, bring some water, work gloves, clothes for working outside in the rain because it's supposed to be a rainy one tomorrow.
Right.
Yeah, didn't plan this right.
No, last weekend was great.
Nice. No dogs, please, because they just kind of, unfortunately, get in the way.
But, yeah.
With that many people. Be happy to have everyone.
And anything else going on with Trail Mix right now? You're talking Peterson,
that's
the other big project.
Peterson, we're going to be working on the North Bridget Cove Trail, which is the one that goes out to the Camping Cove Cabin.
Yeah.
Did some work out there last year. We're going to continue on that. And some more work on the Outer Point Trail. Mm-hmm.
That's a nice one. That Outer Point Trail has become. So that's the idea there is that whole area, not just the Rainforest Trail, but that whole area will have the.
Yeah, we're going to continue. So we made it more wheelchair accessible. The first part down to the water and put a picnic bench in and a fire ring, and that's been getting a lot of use, which is great.
That's cool.
And then we're going to continue to harden the rest of that trail because it is that slippery boardwalk for most of it until it connects to the Rainforest Trail. So
all right,
yeah,
awesome.
We're going to try and harden that.
Eric Boras from Trail Mix, thanks so much for coming in, man.
Thank you, Andy.
And it's National Trails Day tomorrow, so if you want to do your part, go head over to the Lemon Creek Trailhead that's right behind the Home Depot, and Eric and his crew will be there, and they'll get you on your way.
Excellent.
Eric,
yeah.
Thanks so much, man.
Thank you.
We got a little Detroit Rock City coming up.
Of course.
you got to follow, and you got to be before kids.
Yeah.
All right, here it is. That's it for a Juno afternoon. Thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks to all my guests, including Strutter, Eric Boras from Trail Mix. Thanks to Colette and Miles and Karina, and also to Sarah McNair Grove from the Juno Community Band. Hope you guys have a great weekend. It's going to be a little rainy. That's all right. Get out there and enjoy it, and enjoy First Friday tonight.
This This is a brave new world of cyber warfare, and we have to have a measured response, but nonetheless a strong enough response that we can...